हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Yes. So now, Bhishma has come, and after hearing about what happened in the Dvaitavan, then he's trying to convince Duryodhana that maybe it's time that you kind of like make peace with the Pandavas, because your whole position was you're dependent on Karna. Karna was defeated. He even ran away from the battlefield. And so therefore then, you're not going to win. But Duryodhana is thinking in the back of his mind, oh, but he doesn't know what the Danavas have told me. So, you know, we're going to win anyway. And so then Karna, then because he feels insulted by Bhishma, says, so we'll all go out and all conquer the four directions and all that. You know, so he'll go out for a year and all that. So then Duryodhana arranges an army that has supplies and all that. And so then he can, make everything ready. So Duryodhana says, just ask and I shall do whatever I can to help. Karna at once began to make arrangements for his expedition. Duryodhana amassed a vast army with a year's supplies. After consulting with Brahmins and gaining Dhritarashtra's permission, he selected a favorable day to depart. Bhishma and Vidura, however, did not approve of Karna's plans, but they chose to remain silent. Perhaps the fool would be defeated somewhere and his pride would be curbed. At least, while he was gone, he would not be influencing Duryodhana toward yet another rash scheme, right? So this already is a bad scheme, but it's just one scheme, and it'll keep him busy for a year. While this way, he won't be around coming up with newer and newer schemes. Like, you know, he came up with a scheme, well, why don't you go out and, you know, show off your wealth and all that? And so then they did, and they got defeated, you know. So he's saying, okay, they want to do something more stupid. Blessed by the court brahmanas, who uttered prayers for his victory, Karna went out of the city, followed by thousands of troops. He first attacked King Drupad's beautiful city. Drupad did not pay allegiance to the Kauravas. Like many of the kings who had accepted Yudhishthira's rule, Drupad was not inclined towards Dhritarashtra. In the end, however, the superior force brought from Hastinapur overpowered Drupad and obliged him to offer Dhritarashtra tribute. Karna then moved north, subjugating all the kings in that region. He vanquished Bhagadatta as well as the Himalayan mountain kings. Traveling east, he overcame many tribes. None were able to defeat him in battle as he rained down fierce arrows, because he's very good, right? Surya's son was a peerless fighter who on earth could face, especially when the Kuru army joined him. He soon defeated all the kings in the south and made his way west, conquering and subjugating all in his path. Well, within a year, Karna had accumulated a huge amount of wealth from his conquests. He carried it back to Hastinapur in a long line of chariots and oxen. Duryodhana's father and brothers greeted him as he entered the city. They congratulated Karna and embraced him. Duryodhana said, "What I have not received even from Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, or any other, I have received from Karna." Right? It means that such support, going out, that military support and all that. Others, you know, haven't even supported him verbally, let alone physically going out and doing something for him. O mighty armed hero, in you I have my protector. All the Pandavas and other kings are nothing compared to you, right? So already he's forgotten, because maybe in his position he's not. But since the Danavas and Daityas said that they'll enter into their bodies and influence them, and so then he's convinced that, no, they're going to be the medium for the Danavas and Daityas. And so then they'll be very much more powerful than the Pandavas, because they only have the demigods. Seeing Karna successful, some of the citizens were pleased, while others who were favorable to the Pandavas lamented or remained silent. Dhritarashtra was overjoyed and embraced Karna with affection, considering him his own son. From that day on, Duryodhana, seeing Karna's prowess, considered the Pandavas defeated. The prince was encouraged and began to think about performing the Rajasuya sacrifice. Now that the world had been brought under his control, he wanted to equal the Pandavas in every way. If he could preside over the Rajasuya, then all his desires would be fulfilled. Because basically, he didn't know that he needed a Rajasuya sacrifice. But when Yudhishthira did one, then he has to have one. You know, it's just like, so many individuals, they're quite happy in that. But then they see someone else with more, they got to have that. But when the prince approached his chief priest and requested him to perform the sacrifice, he was told it was not possible. As long as Yudhishthira lives, the priest said, no man on earth can perform the Rajasuya. It is only possible for one monarch to perform that sacrifice at any one time. Nor can a man perform the sacrifice in his father's presence. Right, so he's saying, okay, yeah, we'll go out and kill Yudhishthira. But also in his father's presence. So that means his father would have to go and whatever king else had done, then only. So that was, it's a unique position to be able to do the Rajasuya. So the point is, it's such a grand thing. You can't just have everybody doing it and making a laughing stock. Then it's nothing special. So the restrictions are there to make sure it's done and it won't be done again until, because someone's the king, his father is alive. But once he leaves, okay, that's there. But you can't have another king do it. You'd have to wait till that's done. So the point is, Yudhishthira, if they have the battle and Yudhishthira's killed, then okay, that's one thing. But then he'd have to wait until his father goes to the forest and leaves. Only then after that could he do. But the point is it won't have the same meaning. Right? Because the idea is that, you know, then everybody's there and all that. You know, and the Pandavas see that. But if the Pandavas don't see it, how important will it be? Then the priest explained that there was another sacrifice resembling the Rajasuya, which Duryodhana could perform. It was called the Vaishnava sacrifice. No person other than the immortal Vishnu had ever performed it, and it was equal to the Rajasuya in every way. O king, using the gold offered as tribute by the kings of the world, make a golden plow. With this plow you should prepare the ground, and upon that spot I shall begin the sacrifice. Duryodhana immediately discussed the sacrifice with his father and counselors, who all expressed approval. He then appointed people to the various posts required for the sacrifice and instructed artisans to make the golden plow. All the Kuru elders were delighted to see Duryodhana performing a sacrifice, an act which they hoped would increase his piety and glory of the Kuru race. So the idea is that, okay, he's going to do this just because he wants to do this because Yudhishthira did, but at least he's doing a sacrifice. He's doing something in that, because in that, then the Lord's going to be worshipped. Then so much charity will be given to the Brahmins, so much nice facilities will be given to the public. You know, it'll be a very big arrangement, and they're hoping that he'll get more piety. It's due to lack of piety, such a nonsense. So they're hoping if he gets more piety, maybe now he'll have a better discretion. All the Kuru elders were delighted to see Duryodhana performing a sacrifice, an act which they hoped would increase his piety and the glory of the Kuru race. Swift messengers were dispatched to invite the kings of the world. Dushasana asked messengers to go to the Dvaitavan and invite the Pandavas so they could see the Kuru's power. When Yudhishthira heard the invitation, he replied, "It is indeed fortunate that Duryodhana is performing such a great sacrifice. I should very much like to attend, but it will not be possible. I cannot leave the forest until my vow is completed." Right, so then from that aspect, he won't see. Duryodhana will only see me in Hastinapur only when the 13 years of exile are over. Bhima, however, glared at the messenger. "King Yudhishthira will go when we are ready to put Duryodhana into the fire kindled by weapons." Yeah, but it means we will attend a sacrifice, you know, with that Duryodhana is involved in. Just he will be the wood in the, and that is offered. He will be offered into the fire of the coming from the kindling of their weapons. Repeat this message to Duryodhana. "When 13 years are complete, Dharmaraj, the Lord of men, in the battle, the sacrifice of battle, will pour onto the sons of Dhritarashtra the ghee of his anger. That is when we shall come." The other brothers said nothing. When Duryodhana heard the messages, he simply smiled, because he's just thinking, oh, the Donovans will take care of, so he's not worried. Thousands of Brahmas and Kshatriyas arrived in Hastinapur. They were warmly greeted and offered food and drink in appropriate accommodation. Right, so that means what arrangements are there to take care of so many guests. And it's not that everybody just gets a little, you know, a little paper cup, a little bit of, lemon juice or something with a guy on the road with a big pot pouring it out of his loda. It means everybody is first-class arrangements according to their position. Vidura took charge of receiving the guests, ensuring that they were satisfied in every way, right? Because he's the most religious, he'll see to the finest detail. Once they had been properly refreshed, he showed them to the sacrificial compound outside the city, right? Because it's very big, so it has to be in the grounds outside. The visiting kings brought tribute, and Duryodhana and his brothers offered the Brahmins charity. Right, so they've already gotten tribute from the aspect of fighting, you know. Now they're bringing tribute, you know, for the sacrifice, because they give tribute, they'll also share in a portion, and then all that tribute can be given to the Brahmins. So then, you know, everybody benefits. Like that. It means the kings benefit, Duryodhana's benefit, the Brahmins all benefit, they'll do nice things for the public, they'll all benefit. So that's the point of these big, big sacrifices, that, you know, everybody gets nicely benefited. At the end of the sacrifice, Duryodhana re-entered his city, surrounded by his brothers and eulogized by bards and singers. His friends and relatives glorified him, saying that this sacrifice had surpassed all those performed by his ancestors, all of whom had gone to heaven. However, some fearless citizens said that the sacrifice did not compare with Yudhishthira's Rajasuya. Although Duryodhana heard these comments, he did not respond. He knew it was true. The Rajasuya had been the most opulent and splendid ceremony he had ever witnessed. His had come nowhere near its magnificence, so it may have been greater than any other king had done in his dynasty, since anybody can knows and that, but it still didn't compare to Yudhishthira's performance of Rajasuya. So it's not even just because the Rajasuya and the Vishnu Yajna, the Vaishnava Yajna, they may be comparable in what's done and the elaborateness and that, but the way in which it was done, and it's thousands came, but Yudhishthira would feed 100,000 Brahmins at a time. And when they finished eating, then immediately the next group was brought in, and that went on all day, every day for the whole. So he would be feeding millions of Brahmins like that every day. You don't, that kind of thing was not there. And the volume of things brought in, the tribute in that, was so much that Duryodhana, even though he's as strong as 10,000 elephants, just moving it, he became tired. He had to sit down sometimes. And they had to tell kings to wait in line. Means they're all there waiting to give tribute. No, wait. You have to take one at a time they can give, because they would give so much some kings, were going to others and trying to get, if they can bump him up in the line and stuff like this. It was a whole scene going on. So he's never seen that before. So he knows it's true from that angle. But technically, yes, by ritual, maybe it's the same. But as far as how it was done in that, no one can compare it to Yudhishthira. Karna saw his friend again become pensive. Placing his arm around the prince, he said, "O best of the Bharatas, by good fortune, your sacrifice has been successful. This is only the beginning. When the Pandavas are slain in battle, you will then complete the Rajasuya. I look forward to again glorifying you at that time." Right. So in that, he would have been glorified as, somebody, very nice and everything like that. And everybody's saying, oh, how nice it's done. And everybody, it was. As far as that. It means as far as him compared to any other king, yes, it was the greatest. But compared to Yudhishthira, no. Duryodhana embraced Karna and thought of the Rajasuya. "O Kurus," he said, "when shall I celebrate the best of sacrifices, the Rajasuya, after killing the wicked-minded Pandavas?" Somehow he's the good guy, they're wicked. They're wicked because they don't support him. That's the point. Karna stopped walking and spoke gravely. "Hear my words, O king. As long as I have not killed Arjuna, I will not taste meat or accept luxuries. I will give to anyone anything they ask of me. When asked for charity, I will never say, 'I cannot give.'" right? So now he's made that just to establish. He's trying to support Duryodhana. And that one is that he's doing such a great thing, you know, for Duryodhana. And also at the same time, by doing that, it increases his piety so that his potency and power will become greater also. Because he knows the Pandavas are so powerful because of their piety. Dhritarashtra's son cheered to hear Karna's vows. They considered the Pandavas already slain, right? Because now he's going to become... Duryodhana has done this great pious work. Now Karna personally would do this great pious work. As the handsome Karna strode powerfully into his palace, just as Kuvera enters his abodes, the Kauravas all praised him. The Pandavas also heard about Karna's vow. Bhima and Arjuna sneered, but Yudhishthira was alarmed. Thinking of Karma's impenetrable natural armor, he knew Karna could not be slain. Yudhishthira brooded on the situation. He had brought on all their hardships and dangers. Out of their devotion to him, his brothers now accepted miseries they did not deserve. Soon they will face great danger in the battle with the Kuru heroes, who would be assisted by Karna and the other powerful warriors. Yudhishthira fell into anxiety day and night. Remembering the gambling match and the harsh words of Karna and Duryodhana, he felt as if a lance had pierced his heart. His brothers and Draupadi, seeing his condition, also felt pained. Enraged at the Kauravas, they longed for the time when they could at least confront them in battle. Each day the brothers practiced rigorous physical exercises, keeping themselves fit for fighting and giving vent to their wrath. Now, because they'll feel upset, so by doing the exercise, then it uses that energy so they can put their anger into that. And at the same time, it maintains them for battle, because you have to be quite fit for that, you know, because it starts from sunrise and ends at sunset. So that's, you know, basically, you know, in the winter, maybe a little bit shorter, but it's at least, it would be, you know, between 10, depending upon where it is, 10 and 11 hours. You know, just full-on fighting. It's not that, you know, everybody, there's a noon break, you know, whistle blows, and everyone sits back and gets out their lunchbox and stuff like that. No, they just all day go. And then in the evening, then they'll go back, take their bath, have their meals and everything, sit with friends and all that. And in the morning, again, they're out there. So you have to be very physically fit. In the final months of their stay in the forest, Vyasadeva again came to see them. Yudhishthira worshipped him with devotion and then sat before him to hear his words. Seeing the Pandavas lean and anxious, the sage was moved to compassion. In a voice choked with tears, he said, "O foremost of men, no man can ever experience unmixed happiness. Everyone experiences happiness and distress in due course. A wise man therefore becomes neither joyful nor grief-stricken. He does not indulge in happiness nor give away to sorrow when each arrives. Rather, he practices asceticism to attain the eternal happiness born of spiritual realization." Right? Because on the material platform, you're going to, if you're happy, it's just a matter of time before something will come up that's not happy. And if you're not happy, it's just a matter of time before it adjusts and you become happy. So the wise person doesn't take it too seriously. Whatever's coming, then he deals with that. But if he actually wants to become happy, then he has to take up austerities. And that means then engaging your life in connection with the Supreme. That will bring about self-realization. That will take you beyond this fluctuating temporary happiness and distress. From asceticism comes the greatest happiness, not from improving our material circumstances. Right? So doing asceticism for material circumstances, the material circumstances may be better happiness, but then it'll also give you more distress. So only when you go beyond. Foolish persons seeking material enjoyment by any means obtain births as beasts in their next life. They never enjoy happiness. O King, your practice of asceticism, although difficult, will lead to your ultimate welfare. Right? So ultimate means, you know, you'll be victorious here and then you'll move beyond. After describing the many qualities a man should develop from asceticism, truthfulness, freedom from anger, self-control, non-violence, Vyasadeva went on to speak of charity, which Yudhishthira always practiced when he had wealth. Then, when Vyasadeva fell silent, Yudhishthira asked, "Pray tell me, great Rishi, which is better, asceticism or charity? Which produces a better result?" and which is more difficult to practice. So then next time we'll see what Vyasadeva says. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.